Hi and welcome to my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK, and this is episode 15 of season 2, and with me, as always, producer Dodds.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right.
How did you feel about Annabelle's episode that went out last week? Sorry.
Fascinating. I thought it was so interesting to hear an insider's view on how the political system is run, and it didn't give me much hope. I'm not gonna lie.
It was just good to know how much trouble we're in.
Yes.
Just to get a real...
It's good to know some facts rather than the lies that we are fed.
Yeah, I feel like that wasn't lacking in facts either. It was almost like a... I don't want to say a school lesson, but it was like you had to concentrate a lot. But it was all really interesting. So yeah.
We learnt a lot, I think. She's got such an interesting career journey.
And then next week, we've got Gemma's podcast coming out.
Gemma's
is
a good...
very excited for, personally.
She's got such a good soul, but just a hard journey that she's been on.
Yeah. This is like maybe a good caveat for next week, because there was like lots of... There's probably like four moments in that interview... We recorded it last week, but it's going out next week, where I thought to myself, wow. Like, I was just listening to her and I went, wow, because I couldn't believe just the stuff that she's been through. It's just crazy.
Yeah, so if you don't know Gemma, Gemma is an actress. She was in Emmerdale and Holby City. You'll hear her story. It's sad in parts, but really uplifting as well, what she's done and what she's continuing to do. So I look forward to hearing feedback on that episode, because I think I'm most proud of it, actually.
Yeah, it's good, wasn't it?
My interview skills are getting good. I know this will be a little bit late when we actually go out with this episode, but it doesn't feel right not to talk about the tragic accident that happened to Kobe and Gigi Bryant just a few days ago before we recorded the podcast. Traveling to the Mamba Academy in California for basketball practice. Their helicopter crashed and everyone on board very sadly passed away. One thing that I do want to talk about is how his Mamba mentality legacy will live on, because the way that he lived and the things that he talked about, if you've not seen any of his interviews, it's definitely worth watching, because he's got a really interesting take on how to live your life. And to sum up what the Mamba mentality is, it means to be able to constantly try and be the best version of yourself. And I think that's probably something we can all think about. It's all about knowing that you're going to find struggles, and it's all about how to be your best as you go through those moments. It's a constant quest to try and be better than you were yesterday. And I think it's probably something we should reflect on. It's a very simple equation. So if you got up at 3 and train from like 4 till 7 every morning, you'll get one more hour's training than if you got up at 4 and train 5 to 7. And if you break that down, so 1 hour a day over a whole year is 365 hours in practice, which would make a massive difference in your ability levels. And that's the way he approached life. So I think there's a lot we can probably take from the Mamba mentality. It's incredibly sad. Bit bizarre, because the Grammys were happening at the Lakers Stadium that night. So there was a real mixture of fans who were mourning Kobe and Gigi and everyone else that was on the helicopter, alongside celebrities who were there for the Grammys. So I think the Grammys were very emotional as well. So not much I can say on that, but I think it's worth just looking up the Mamba mentality, because I think there's a lot everyone could relate to and everyone can take some learnings from. As promised, I said that I was going to do a book review once a month. And actually, this book, amazing timing, won a Grammy for the best audiobook of the year. I have finished it. You're just about to finish it, aren't you, Dodds? You're not...
I don't think I'm going to finish it.
Well, that's a review in itself.
I'll let you say your piece.
Okay. Becoming by Michelle Obama is a story all about her journey from childhood right the way through to the end of their term as president and first lady when Trump took over. I'm going to be brutally honest. I wanted a little bit more. It's an interesting story of how she has come up through what is quite a normal family. If you equate it to the UK, it's definitely a story of class. So she's from a very working class family, and then she's managed to work through and go up right the way up to First Lady. There were a few things that resonated with me. Obviously, the bit where she talked about miscarriage and the fact that it's probably the thing that should be talked about that isn't. So that was reassuring to hear. Also, the fact that she was very career orientated when she started out, and it felt like she put that on the back burner when she became a mum and became Barack's wife. What did you think at Dodds?
I don't know if I thought that.
I felt like when the pressure of becoming a parent then moved, and then Barack was taking on more pressure.
She still wanted to, when she got into the FOTUS, whatever it was called, the First Lady FLOTUS, she still had the goals of, like, I want to bring down obesity was one of her things, and, like, bring opportunities to schools. So she still had her career goals.
Yeah, I suppose.
So I thought she was better to them. I personally didn't think it was a book for me. Not saying it wasn't a good book, but a book for me, because it was, a lot of it was about her growing up, and I was thinking it was going to be more about her presidency. Then when he got in and his sort of term in presidency, that was quite interesting. Her meeting the Queen, what that was like, what's it like at
White House. I love the bit about
when
the Queen.
She's like trying to escape, you know, the limitations that they have, like they can't do anything really unless they're told to do stuff. Donald Trump, some of that was interesting. But then a lot of it was about parenthood, and I'm not in that part of my life where that is. It was interesting, and I was like, if I was going to be a parent, I would be interested. That's the way I'd hope I would do it.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? I'm like a 25-year-old guy, like not thinking about...
I think
family at the moment.
It highlighted that gender bind that we were talking about a couple of weeks ago to
just
perfection.
Just about the scrutiny and the media that she was put under.
The scrutiny, but also the pressure she put on herself, both her and Barack, to make sure that the girls had like a normal life and also that they were the best parents they could be at the same time as running for presidency. There was a lot of pressure on them. And I thought they brought a lot of realism to what has traditionally been something that you just see, like the royal family, like in a corner and like higher up, and you don't get any access to them. So the fact that they went through couples counselling at one point because of the struggles of...
That was really early on, wasn't it?
Really early on, but trying to navigate how to live a life.
I also liked
that
she talked about that, because it was like... they're held up as this incredible duo, aren't they? And it was like, we're just humans who struggle just like everyone else. So I did like the transparency of that.
That's what I got from it.
For me.
That everyone feels the same. Like you take out the job title, and everyone's really, the things that they face that bother them are the same. So family, making sure your kids have the right start, being the best husband or wife you can be, being successful in whatever chosen career is. It made it very accessible, but also normalized.
Yeah, I think that. And that probably helped them, I think, in his candidacy when he was president, because he's very relatable. Like, he used to smoke, like, he eats junk food, but he goes to the gym. She's had these struggles. The kid was overweight. Like, do you know what I mean? There's not a person they could meet who they've not had I think Barack's mum died, I think, of cancer. Like, there's lots of things that they could talk on, that they could meet anybody and be like, I've had a similar experience, which I imagine was just like, well, look, we're not up here.
Yeah.
We're with you. And they even tried, I think, in the White House, they tried to make it less is decorated, what the right word? I don't know.
They tried to make it more homely, didn't
they?
Yeah, yeah. And more natural setting for the family.
Mm.
So that's what I liked about it, the fact that you could relate to it and also not put so much pressure on yourself if you're going through similar things, because you can also see that someone like the president...
What did it win a Grammy for?
Best audiobook. But I enjoyed it. I also felt that it validated my watching of rubbish TV, because she also said the same thing. So me watching Real Housewives of Cheshire is... I can say it with pride now, because I know that Michelle Obama's got a healthy obsession with any sort of DIY show. So I feel better for that. I would have liked a bit more grit. I think there was a few...
Juicy gossip.
Yeah. Especially it seemed to go through the years that he was president very quickly.
Yeah, I thought that. It was like, I saw on the thing, it was like an hour left, and then it only just talked about his just getting re-elected. And I'm like, wow, what the hell?
where we talked to Annabelle last week about the inside scoop on politics and the fact that it takes so much to get things changed. There was loads of similarities there, and how there's a real problem, obviously, with gun crime in America, but that it's so hard to get things
and
changed.
And a lack of diversity, weren't there? That and was a lack of diversity, saying, yeah. White guy kind of thing.
Yeah, which is very similar to the way Annabelle describes UK politics. So I found it fascinating. I didn't learn much. She said at the end how she will never stand for any sort of political position.
So what would you give it out of five? Would you recommend it? Who would you recommend it to?
I think it's difficult for us in the UK to really take too much out of it. Parts are relatable, so I'd probably give it like a 3.5 out of 5.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Because there were certain bits that I really related to and certain bits that made me feel a bit more confident and comfortable with. The fact that you're not on your own if you're going through a few struggles that she and the family went through. But again, it's probably because I can't relate to it too much. I can't relate to living and growing up in
South Side
of Chicago or any suburb of America where it is quite violent. It's not relatable to me, which is what you said about being a young white male in the UK. You can't relate to that, her journey. So it's just interesting to get a bit of an insight into the lives of Michelle and Barack Obama. But I would have liked a little bit more.
I would say it was good. I'd give it 4 stars.
Would you?
I imagine if I'm a young black girl, that book would be like just unbelievably powerful. In fact, thinking about it, because I'm like quite probably the furthest away from who that book's probably for, if I still like it, then it must mean that it's a good book, probably overall.
Yeah.
Bravo. Well done. And well done on the, I'm sure she's listening, so well done on the Grammy.
Great job. Thank you for entertaining us. Next book. I'm already like a couple of chapters into it, and I know that I've already been spouting little facts at you. It's The Body by Bill Bryson.
That's just difficult to say.
So I'll be reviewing that next month. This week, I really want to talk about dating apps and how it fuels insecurities and depression within our society. So for me, I'm going to dive into this. I've been on dating apps. You've been on dating apps.
Adam has also been on dating apps.
So the three of us in this room are probably
the dating app industry
well qualified to talk about this subject. And I'm sure a lot of listeners have also or are experiencing dating apps at the moment. But I want to talk about what it made me feel and how I didn't enjoy it at all. But it's really hard to know how to meet someone in the real world. So I want to get an insider scoop from boys as to the way dating apps are used. And you can get an inside scoop from girls because it's a very clear gender divide on the purpose of them for the genders, I think. I'm quite genuine anyway. So my experience was that I'd go on there, I'd try and find a few. At the beginning, I was like, right, I'm not going to connect with loads of people. I'm just going to do it for the ones that I found interesting and then try and strike up a conversation. But I quickly learned that that is not the way that it is basically played. It's like a game that people are just making loads and loads of connections and then deciding who to speak to, which I went on a little rant before we started recording. But for me, Bumble was set up so the girl could actually make the first move. But in reality, it's still the male that's in control, because from my experience, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but this is the impression I got, that boys just like loads, and then they'll get messages from from their matches, and then decide whether to message them back or not, which still gives the power to the male, even though it's the girl who has to make the first move. Am I right, or people just didn't want to message me back?
No, in a nutshell, Adam hasn't got a mic, so I'll speak for both of us. But I would just, I think the guys, you just like them all. And then what's the saying?
They throw enough shit at the wall, some of it'll stick.
Some of it'll stick, yeah.
How romantic.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and then just like assess what comes back, I guess. But what I'm interested to know why you think that that you're talking about depression and anxiety.
It's because that fuels a real insecurity. So I went into it really green and really like naive, thinking that people were all on there for the same reasons. So I was there trying to make connections and try and speak to people. And then people would talk to you and you'd get chatting. You might go out on a date and then they'd just disappear. And the ghosting part was the bit that really used to upset me, whether it was just that they connected with you and then disappeared and they'd message you once and then not message you back, or whether you were talking to them or you went out with them and then they just disappeared. And the ghosting part really hit me hard because it made me think, why am I not good enough?
And you think that's a universal thing, where my perspective of it is that if somebody ghosted me, I wasn't that caught up on it, or I'd just be caught up on it for a little bit and then just like move on. Does that mean I'm less emotionally invested probably in the app? But I'm wondering if...
I took it really personally though.
If it just... I'm wondering if the rejection on the dating app, which is comes thick and fast, whether that just heightens an anxiety or self-doubt that's already there. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think it probably does because you don't want to be judged. I certainly don't want to be judged. I don't like being judged, and to feel like someone's made a judgment on you based on very little information is a thing I think that really got to me. Like, how dare they not know me as a person before they just decided to disappear? And I looked at it that way rather than they're just not right anyway.
The way that those apps are set up though, it's like they're designed so they don't get to know you before they make their decision. Do you know what I mean? It's just like this infinite swiping loop that there's no time to get to know everybody. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but part of me wishes there was another girl in the room just to validate my theory, because I think girls are coming at it from a very different point of view. Or the people that I know who were on it. My housemate at the time were both on it. We both had exactly the same feelings, that it was like that rejection, that you were just one in however many and it was a game for people. Whereas for me, I didn't want to play games. I'm not into that.
So I don't think that's a female only thing. I think that's a genderless problem, where it's people who are like more emotionally invested in trying to find somebody long-term.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because Adam, podcast editor, was saying the exact same thing before we started, where literally word for word the exact same thing about that he just didn't want to play those games, that kind of thing. So I don't think that's a genderless.
It feels weird. Problem. It definitely feels like there's a big gender divide in it though, because you never see what the other gender's experience is.
No, but then there's also...
It's funny, isn't it?
There's stories of... there's somebody downstairs, because I was talking to him about this topic yesterday, saying that girls go on there when it's the end of the month because they go on a date and then they know they can get a free hot dinner. That's what, I won't say any names, obviously, but, and that's not the first time I've heard that.
Really?
Yeah, that girls do that.
Because that's what I was really interested
in. With no intention of like second date going back to theirs or anything like that. They just go for the drink or the dinner.
For the food?
Mm. So I don't think it's boys are playing games, girls are playing games. I think it's just like...
Everyone's playing games.
I'm not saying they're equal, because I imagine boys play a little bit more.
We have discussed as well the different types of platform and knowing which ones to choose for your intentions. And I think it's quite tricky to know which is the right platform to choose depending on what you want. And certain platforms have got different reputations. But me, I was really stubborn when I first started looking into them, thinking, I don't want to pay to meet someone. It shouldn't be that I have to pay money to meet someone, because there shouldn't be anything wrong with me. Yeah. And I also, and Dodds and I talked about this at the time, because I used to get really frustrated with it. I used to go on the same cycles whereby I would be on them for the beginning, and then I'd get really upset that either people weren't messaging me back or I got ghosted. And then I'd be like, right, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm going to do it in the real world. I'm just going to go out and I'm going to talk to people. And then you do that and you think, no one talks to anyone anymore. Everyone's just on the phones because everyone's on these dating apps. So you go out on a night out and no one's interested in talking to you. So then on sad Sundays, which is my little term for Sundays when you're on your own and all your friends have got families and you just like sat on your own, you go back on the dating apps.
I wouldn't
apps.
Be surprised if there's like a huge spike in activity on those apps on Sunday.
I bet there
it's
is.
Like,
sad Sundays are phenomenal.
You get in the week and you're working and you're busy and you just like forget about it and can't be bothered to spend any time about it. And then Sunday you just like, you've watched Netflix.
Yeah.
You've had your lunch and it's like 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
an Instagram showing you all the little maybe trips out that all the relationships and families are having. And
why don't I, I'll list some apps and you can tell me what they're stereotypically, what you think they're used for.
Yeah. One last thing though on them. Right. So I got so like disheartened by it and confused by what people, what the opposite sex were looking for from them, that I actually gave my phone to one of the boys in the office and made them write my profile.
And how much did it go up after that?
It went up quite a lot because he wrote really wrote random things on it.
Got to stand out, I guess.
Existentialism or prunes was the question he wrote in my Hinge profile.
He's not just thought of that. He's gonna. That's gonna have come from some testing. Or what's your perception of Tinder?
Hookups.
Yeah, but that's where you, is that where you were getting?
I didn't go
ghosted?
In that. I never didn't went. Even, I didn't even go near Tinder. No.
Bumble.
I'm getting like Tinder. More volume
of fellas.
Yeah, but a lot of people who ghosted you.
I wonder if that's because I imagine fellas on Bumble just like everyone.
Yeah.
Because it's not up to them to decide, so they're just putting themselves out there, and that's why you get a higher,
that
a higher perception
sense.
Back.
I didn't like the game of Bumble because you're meant to have control as a woman. But as I said before, because men are obviously just liking everyone to see what they get, they're back in control because they can decide whether to message you or not because they've got infinite possibilities because they've got all these matches. So instead of the real reason that the app was set up, I don't think it actually fulfills that.
I guess girls don't get those creepy little DM. I mean, I'm not working for Bumble here, but does it not help because you don't get those creepy DMs that you would do on Tinder?
So from my experience, I didn't get, from the other one I was on, I didn't get creepy DMs anyway. I was lucky. I think I escaped.
Hinge? Do you use Hinge?
I used Hinge.
What's your thoughts on Hinge?
Less volume of people, but seemed to be on there for the right reasons. But also, there was a lot of crossover between people on both Bumble and Hinge.
What? You saw the same people?
Yeah, I saw the same people.
Wonder why that is. I think with Hinge, there's like a higher barrier to entry. Like you can't just...
You've got to put more
correct me if I'm wrong, you can't just go, I like that person. You've got to find something to and comment back.
No,
you
can like something that someone says, but you've got to put more effort into it.
You've got to like reply to
it. You can get a bit more personality across than you can on Bumble.
I think it seems a bit more serious, don't you?
Yeah.
What about off the apps then and like dating sites?
Never use them and I refuse to pay for them. I looked at Match.com. Yeah.
But what? You didn't want to pay?
Do you know what it was? It was the user experience and the fact that it looked a bit cheap and dirty that put me off. Yeah. Which is something that they should probably look at because if you're going to pay for it, I don't want it to look like cheap. You want a high quality experience.
Just for any Match.com employees that are listening.
Yeah.
That's free advice. Mm. So if you don't have any of those apps then, or you're not going to use Match.com, where do you find people?
Honestly, I don't know.
Because I don't think you can just go into a, like, a
you
bar.
You can't just go well, into a bar
I
would, anymore.
I don't know if it
well,
was
you
different.
Can. Wouldn't that be wonderful if you were the one that started us talking to someone?
What? Like, are we talking about in a bar, in a club, in this hypothetical?
Yeah, or in anywhere. I don't know because I'm now dating someone I went to school with.
I would never go up to somebody in a bar because I don't know if you can. Maybe it was different like when there wasn't any dating apps, but like now, would it be seen as weird to go up to someone and go?
Adam's nodding very vigorously.
It would be weird, would it, Adam?
So Adam's just told us that there's like a bit of a fear of going up to someone in a bar because you don't know the boundaries. And when you're on an app, you've kind of got that like guard that you're not going to, you know that you're both there for something rather than getting it wrong and saying something that might be offensive or inappropriate. But that's what I wanted. I wanted someone to come and talk to me in the real world because I don't know about you, it's really hard because you've not got a microphone, but I don't know, and you, Dodds, but at the time when you were using them, I also just thought, right, I'm not going to behave the way I normally do. I'm going to try something. When it didn't work,
yeah,
I'm going to try
like,
something completely different. I'm going to be a different person, which isn't a great starting point anyway.
Yeah. And I guess that's the problem with like catfishing, not just like the looks wise, but personality wise, you just put on this like air of confidence.
Yeah, which you don't have because then you cry when someone ghosts you.
But yeah, so you would like that in a bar because it shows that real, I am actually this confident character.
On dating apps, you don't know if they're actually interested or not, or whether it's just a game of playing how many likes can I get.
Yeah.
In a bar, when someone comes and talks to you, they've got to put the effort in, which means that they're more interested.
I would just never do that, though. I'm not confident enough just to walk up to somebody in the bar. But also, like, I don't go to bars and, like, hang out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know where that that crossover. But apart from that, like, where else would you meet somebody? Do you know what I mean? Because all of my relationships have been, like, that individual has been forced into my environment. So I went to college with Faith, went to uni with Mel, and worked with Steph. Mm. So they've all been like, I've never made any outward effort
to like go and meet somebody.
But they've, like, they've been forced into my...
Well, especially in my position, I could never date someone from the office, partly because everyone's like a million years younger than me anyway, but also that I don't feel like it's appropriate for a managing director to date someone in work.
I think it would depend. It would depend on the individual, because if it was like a sensible individual and you weren't like, then I think you could.
Yeah. It's incredibly difficult. Really, really hard. So do you want to hear some of my bad... No, I really shouldn't say about a bad date story, should I?
I think we're in too deep now. I think like we've got to.
So what happened was I stupidly put on my profile that I was really good at ping pong. I'm not. I'm awful. So every first date I went on was at blooming Roxy Ballroom playing ping pong.
Same date. So you do the same thing.
Yeah, it's boring.
She should got good by the end.
No, I was still really bad. One date I went on, the guy was definitely mansplaining how to do serving on ping pong and wouldn't let us play properly until he taught me to serve and I did it correctly.
It's like a PE teacher or something.
Yeah, it was. I was just like, can I just not hit the ball and play?
But he was like, no, you got to do the technique.
Yeah,
right?
I wasn't allowed to play properly until I properly served.
He sounds like a laid back kind of guy.
Then we went for some food. And this is an interesting thing for me to say, because I am a very complex character. I know, I realise that. But he made me pay for half of my dinner on a first date. And it was only a while.
That's a whole conversation on its own, isn't it? Whether you should pay for dinner or not.
But I also think on a first date, you need to show a bit of effort.
I think so too.
It's not about me not paying.
Yeah,
because
I'm quite,
and I'm also, I drive Liam mental because I'm always like, right, you paid for the last one, I'll pay for this one.
That's the fella she's seeing now.
Yeah, sorry. And I drive him bonkers because he's like, please just stop. If I want to pay for it this time, I pay for it. And I'm okay, I'm sorry. and he also said that he'd probably lose his wallet and I'll have to pay for a few things on the trot. So that's nice.
Yeah.
But on a first date, I think...
It's just a nice thing to do. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It was like just paying. Bizarre. And then, yeah, he just went a bit weird. I'd silence my Bumble. You know, you can go on like holiday mode or whatever. And I turned it back on and I got a message straight away from him being like, how shit is this? We've been on a date and now you're back on Bumble. And I was like, how do you know that? And he said, oh, I got a notification that Katie's back on Bumble. Why not connect? And I don't think that happens. I think he was stalking a little bit.
Can you see if you're online on Bumble?
Yeah. So if you put your stuff on silence or you have a break from it, you can set it for a time that it breaks and your location isn't on. If you go back on it, your location's back on because it says where you are. So I think he was stalking me a little bit. So I said, look, I put it on a timer so it wasn't on and now it's back on again. He was so weird. He just kept messaging me really aggressive, like, I thought that we had a nice date and all this sort of stuff. And to see that you're back on Bumble wanting to talk to other people, it just... And I was like, whoa.
We're only one date in.
And you mansplained ping pong to me and you made me pay for half my dinner. And then a few months later, I got a friend request on Facebook from him after I told him I didn't want anything to do with him. Like, I found that really hard because then I didn't...
Yeah, that's just like you don't want that sort of
commitment
level on... What sounds like a bad first date anyway?
Yeah, I just didn't know what to do.
Committed.
I didn't know what the right thing was to do. And one, I'm not very good at upsetting people and I don't like it. I carry that with me and I carry a lot of blame, which is something I'm going to talk about later in the podcast. So for someone to make me feel like that when I don't really know them anyway.
Yeah, it's just a bit intense, isn't it?
It was really intense. And I found a lot of the dating experiences really intense. I'm really quite hard. And I think that's what knocked my confidence and made me feel quite insecure. So I can see why depression in dating apps is something that is really prevalent. And there's some really interesting stats about it as well. There's some research that was done last year that reported that 1 in 10 users spend 14 hours a week searching, because it becomes a bit of a habit within the app, and it's called infinite swiping, that sees users like swiping through endless faces on the app, and it's becoming addictive. So a survey of 1,000 dating app users in the UK found that nearly 30% spend more than 7 hours a week trying to find a match, and 14% spent swipe for over 14 hours, which is a lot. Mm. And it, what that
13 of those hours would be on the Sunday.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. I just hated all the rules. I hated the fact that you weren't meant to text someone on a Thursday or Friday night or Saturday night because you didn't want to seem like you didn't have a life. It really like threw my whole being off, and I didn't like it. And I'm not surprised that there was a study by the University of North Texas found that Tinder users reported a lower levels of self-worth than those not using dating apps. And I'm really, really not surprised. Where 2018 study found that around 50% of matches don't message back, which again knocks your confidence, because you're thinking, one, you've matched, especially on Bumble, you've matched with me in the first place, then why are you not messaging me back? What's the point in matching with me if you're never going to message back? And then it's just not a surprise that Grindr and Tinder are in the top 10 of apps that make you unhappy, because it's a minefield. It really is. It really, really is.
I feel like it's, they should probably come with a warning or something. And it's like, if you suffer from anxiety or lack of self-worth or depression or something, that these apps used in a certain way will only heighten those feelings. And if that is the case, then there's some precautions that need to be put in place, that you only use it at and you'll have to put those rules on yourself, but it'd be like only using it for a certain amount of time, you know, only spending, only connecting with a certain amount of people. Do you know what I mean? Like limiting your use, or or trying to understand that it's not always used for the same reasons that you're using them for, or something. There needs to be some sort of, you'd have to regulate yourself just for your own sanity, really.
But I also think there should be some sort of user guide, what to do if someone ghosts you, what it means.
Yeah.
Because it's managing that feeling of it's not about you, because it feels like it is about you. But in reality,
it's difficult not to take the rejection personally,
really,
isn't it?
Really hard not to take it personally. And then it knocks your confidence for going out in the real world and talking to someone, because someone else has rejected you that either you thought you had a connection with, or I found it ridiculously difficult from someone who's just been in long-term relationships pretty much her whole adult life, going into something that people just were playing. It felt like they were playing a game.
Yeah.
Not knowing what everything meant starting out. Maybe I should write a book about it. The User Guide to Dating Apps. That's how we make our millions.
Do you have any questions for me in terms of dating apps and from the male perspective?
Did you use it like a game?
Yeah.
Did you consider that the other person might not be?
No.
Right.
Tinder, really. So I guess there's like a use. Most people know that that's what they're there for.
Yeah.
But you'd end up like developing like a script, like you just say the same thing to everybody, and then you just figure out what worked and what didn't, and then
see, I didn't do that either.
Just seeing who got, like, who it was really, who just got back to you.
Yeah.
And then if the conversation, for me, like my experience, if the conversation just pitted out, then that's like as much you as it is me.
Right. Did you ghost anyone?
Yeah.
Were you ghosted?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
How did it feel?
That's what I was saying to you earlier, where it's just like, I don't think I was maybe as emotionally involved in the app. So it was just like, I can't say that you weren't like, oh, okay, cool. But then you're just like, because there's so many, like, just carry on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm trying to think of like questions for the females. Would you ever message a guy first on like Tinder or something, not like Bumble?
Well, Hinge is my only example of that where I could have done it. So on...
I was finding
Hinge,
it weird.
Do you know what? No. The only way I'd make a first move on the ones where they can message me first is to like a picture. But that's why I quite liked Hinge, because you could see their intentions, whether they were interested.
Mm.
Whereas on Bumble, it felt like a game and it was just like a law of averages. Hinge, you knew that someone actually wanted to speak to you. Whereas on Bumble, it was like, whether it was the right day or whether they had any other matches and things like that. So I'm better when I know that someone likes me first, because then right. I can behave and the like. I can decide whether I like them.
So what, you would message people first or no?
No, I'd like I could like a picture, but I would never start a conversation. I'm such a feminist.
I was finding it weird if the girls write first.
You found it weird?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I don't, and I don't.
And I don't know why that is.
But I don't want to be like, I didn't want to come across as forward.
How weird's that though, isn't it?
It's weird, isn't it?
There was like.
But some people would like that because they'd like the confidence.
I guess it depends what the message said.
It depends what the message said, yeah.
Any other questions?
And I wasn't in it for that.
What was the go-to guy message that you'd always get? As in like, what was the most common thing that guys would just message you saying? Do you know what I mean? Just so for the fellas out there, know not to send these messages.
I got a lot about my smile.
Oh, really?
Because I can't pout, can I? So every photo...
like, I just know that.
I know, but but I don't do duck face or anything because I can't do it. I look ridiculous. So All of my photos are me Cheshire catting because I can't pose any other way than a massive grin. So I got a lot about my smile, which I guess is complimentary. But I think if you're interested in someone, take a little bit more time to think about the person. We said this in the podcast.
Personalise the message.
Yes. Look at what they're talking about in their bio and write a little bit about them, which is what the ones that I did end up speaking to, they took a little bit more time to think about me.
There's a lesson out there for all the fellas. Yeah. And the women, I guess, if you're going to message first.
And the woman, yeah.
I'm interested to know why I think it's weird that women message first. What does that say about me?
No, because I wouldn't know. But I wouldn't either. I wouldn't put myself out there to be rejected. So I think that's why Bumble is hard, because you're putting yourself out there to not get a response sometimes.
But that's what it's like for the guys.
Yeah, I know, but it's like this societal expectation that the boys make the first move.
Yeah.
It's weird, isn't
weird,
it?
Weird, isn't it?
Isn't that weird? Yeah. Oh, we've discovered our book's going to be amazing.
Can I just actually say I've got a dating story.
Oh, go on.
If anybody's interested. I think you know about this one, where we spoke, but it was a very quick message over because she knew about the fact that I used to do painting. And she just like knew about me already, so it was over pretty quickly. So never met her or anything. But then I used to vlog Steve's stuff, but I also used to grow my own confidence. I used to film myself and put it on YouTube. So I, she'd messaged me on Instagram a couple of times, and then I'd vlogged myself walking from my flat to, do you know about this one?
No.
Walked to the flat to work. And then she watched that video, so she knew where, she recognised the flat, and then she like rocked up outside one evening at about 10:30 at night and then messaged me saying that she was downstairs. And I was like, I was upstairs with, I think I had Louis at the time, and I was like, oh, I'm at the office, like, just go home, like, I'm not there. And then she was like, oh, I've only got like 3% battery, can I like charge my phone? I was like, it's, I'll order you an Uber, like, just let me know where you want to go. And I said, oh, I'm going to be like 45 minutes. She's like, oh, it's okay, I'll wait. And it was like freezing. And she just like stayed there for a bit. And then like, I guess she just left after a while. But she was out there for about 20 minutes.
God.
And it's like, what to do? Because, I mean, now in hindsight, I realised the battery thing was like, obviously just trying to get in. But at the time I was like, I don't want to just leave this girl downstairs. And she's got no phone and she lives miles away. And then like something happens to her and I feel like a...
she's playing the damsel in distress card.
At the time, though, I mean, it's obvious now, but at the time I was like, I would feel really guilty if something happened to her. And I just like, no, go out in the cold. Like, I'm not helping you. So, yeah.
Do you know what else is actually really interesting when you say that? One thing that I realised I did, I dumbed myself down. So I didn't put my job title my profile.
You find that fellas find that intimidating, though, don't you?
Yeah, because I found that people would... either get a bit too into the fact that I've got a podcast and a bit of a following. And I'm like...
damn this podcast.
I don't know whether that was my insecurities or not, but then I didn't know whether people were using me for either career advice or...
Well, you know that to be true, don't you? Because you know that fellas have... Or they want felt you to help you with their business, don't you?
Yeah. Or they felt a little bit intimidated by the fact that I could potentially earn more money than them.
Do you ever find like...
I've had that before.
Guys would be like showing off, do you know what I mean? Like trying to one-up you almost career-wise.
Yeah, that guy who mansplained to me was definitely doing that. I there was definitely a power thing with my dating app experience. And when they found out about my job, it either put people off completely or I got messages from people who obviously had a bit of a power thing going on, where they like to be dominated by a powerful woman.
That is hilarious.
Of which, if you knew me,
it doesn't quite fit the bill.
I don't fit the bill. So I never used to put my job title on there, and I used to like water myself down a little bit, like dumb myself
down. That's a shame.
Which is also interesting from like the male-female dynamic of what we consider dating, the fact that women shouldn't message first and women need to play this role where they're a little bit more subservient. But it's interesting that I thought in order to get more matches, I shouldn't say,
you shouldn't
what,
say
I,
what you do.
I shouldn't say who I am. Yeah.
Because then when you did, you got creepy messages from people who like to be dominated. I mean, I get it. I get the logic. It's just a shame, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's not you. Mm. You're changing who you are. Dating is very much...
It's a minefield.
A minefield. Confused. And it makes you feel like if you go into it with the right intentions, it can really knock your confidence. But also what I have realised from talking about it is that everyone is playing a game.
And there are apps out there for people who are looking for the long-term stuff. But it's more about protecting yourself when you're on there, I guess. So it's like, don't... I mean, it's difficult not to take it so personally, but if you're aware that these apps heighten those already negative feelings, then just approach with caution.
Yeah.
And hopefully that the apps... You know, like TikTok, if you're on TikTok for ages and you have to be on it for a long time, but it will tell you to stop going on it. It will play a video and say, you know, maybe it's time to chill out. Maybe there's a thing
like Netflix does if you're watching too much. Yeah. Are you still watching?
Maybe there should be a thing like that on these apps where it's like you've been swiping for a while or...
Yeah.
A little cool... You know, like betting apps do the same. There's like a cool off period, isn't there?
Yeah.
You've been betting too much or...
Yeah,
whatever.
I think probably. Because you're basically betting with your emotions. So when I was on the dating apps, I definitely felt like I needed to change myself, partly because I carried a lot of worry and anxiety when things didn't go the way I thought they were going to go. I think it made me look at my personality type within work as well and how I deal with things. And what I have realised is I blame myself for a lot. I blame myself if someone rejects me. It was obviously my fault if they stopped talking to me, or I wasn't good enough if they just ghosted me or disappeared. I'm not pretty enough if they match with me and then decide that they don't want to talk to me, or my opening line wouldn't have been good enough. And there was a lot of blame that I put on myself. And if I start thinking about in terms of the wider context, I think I do that in work as well. Part of it is because as a leader, you are trying to protect everybody. So you are the person, the last point of call. So you're always going to have to take the blame, but also be the one that gives out the praise. So try and protect everyone from taking the blame for things that go wrong, because you're ultimately responsible. But there are certain instances where I feel like I should be doing better, and it's really hard for me. And it's something I'm really struggling with at the moment, on how to not take things so personally. Things like people handing the notice in it, I take it extremely personally that I've personally not done enough to make this experience at Social Chain the best it can be. And don't get me wrong, we don't have a lot of people who leave, but when they do, they usually leave for the right reasons. Either they want to pursue a completely different career, or they've had an opportunity that's more aligned with their values. And I can say all that, but it still doesn't mean that I don't think personally I should have done more, or I'm not doing a good enough job to make this place the best place it can be. And I know that self-blame is one of the most toxic forms of emotional abuse, because it amplifies your own insecurities. And I'm really trying to work on how to deal with that. So there's a few bits that I've been reading about worrying, because not only do I blame myself, I also carry that blame and worry, and I apply it over and over and over again. Do you ever do this, by the way?
Overthink
and blame yourself.
Yeah, I'll just go off at like 100 miles an hour and just be like down this rabbit hole of all these things that are happening, and none of it's even begun to happen.
Yeah, and do you spiral?
Yeah.
Yeah, I spiral.
I should have just said spiral rather than try and describe it.
No, I do too. Because I don't think
you're alone in that. I think loads of people. It's like one of those things, you go, oh, don't worry about it. And it's like, well, I have. So,
yeah.
you know what I mean? It's like easier said than done. It's like, how can you not force yourself to worry about it. And in fact, when I was going to went to the doctors today, and I was like a bit worried about going before, but mm-hmm. I was like, there is my advice to everybody. I was thinking, so I took myself out of it. My advice to everybody is like, this period now, worrying about it doesn't change like what the outcome would be. If the outcome's negative, then I can worry about it. Like, worrying's not a bad thing. It's just, there's no point worrying about, is that my control there? So once I took myself out of it, it was a bit easier.
Yeah.
I took my own advice, which I don't think anybody really does, do they?
I think we're the most critical to ourselves. I think if it was anyone else and you were giving someone else advice on a situation, you would be a lot kinder. But I think to ourselves, we're like absolutely horrific to ourselves.
We're almost enemies, really, aren't we?
Yeah.
Is it because you always think that you could have done more?
I think it feeds a little bit into the imposter syndrome that I'm not doing a good enough job. That if something goes wrong, it's because I'm not doing a good enough job.
Well, that's in and out of work.
In and out of work, there. Yeah. That I'm not doing a good enough job. That if something does go wrong in work, that I'm not good enough to be a leader. And it fuels that insecurity then, that I shouldn't be in the role that I am.
Is there examples where you've like then acted on it?
No, because it's usually too late when I have that worry. So it's not like I think about it, then overcompensate. I think I probably will have an incident where something should have happened that it didn't, and then I'll probably over-focus on that for a while. But then something else will come up in a different area that will lead me to that. I think the antidepressants help. I certainly don't worry as much as what I used to. And I've talked before about the benefits that antidepressants have given me. Mm. And I ran out of them 2 weeks ago. And it's amazing how quickly they get out of your system. I didn't have them for a day or two. So every Monday I get in front of everyone and I try and do this inspirational leadership piece. And I put so much pressure on myself to try and give people value in those sessions and show that I am inspirational when some days I don't really feel it. And especially on that day when my antidepressants had gone and my anxiety and my worry came back and I just completely let myself down.
And the root of all that is the imposter syndrome.
I think it must
be. Sort of self, this doubt.
Doubt.
That you're not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
But then how do you explain the sort of more personal aspects like the, say the online app stuff and you're getting ghosted and you're blaming yourself for that.
But I think that's
is that imposter syndrome as well? That you're not good enough for?
I think it is.
You're not good enough for whoever this guy was.
Yeah. I think it's a lack of self-confidence. So I've researched a bit about worrying and where overthinking comes from. And it's actually not really clear to scientists about why and the process of overthinking. So this is from Headspace, which is obviously the app for meditation. It's very helpful. Overthinking engages same parts of the brain that are involved in anxiety and fear. And that's the cerebral cortex, which is the seat of all thinking. It's the logical part of the brain that brings up memories and helps us think about and anticipate things. But if you let yourself obsess over something, you'll have the amygdala's attention, and the amygdala is the emotional center of the brain. Research has found that that's the part that's involved with anxiety and fear, and it's when then things get dramatic, and that is the part that makes your heart pound, and it makes that uneasy feeling and gives you muscle tension. So the more you think about it, it's like a self-fulfilling cycle, that the more you think about it, the more you activate that part of the brain, and you train your brain to think about it over and over again. So that could cause anxiety in the future. The way to do it is to think about something, replace the thought that you're having. So the way that it explains it on here, if you were told to stop thinking about pink elephants, what are you going to think about? You're going to think about pink elephants. If you don't want to think about a pink elephant, conjure up an image of, say, a tortoise. So maybe there's a big tortoise holding a rose in its mouth as it crawls. You're then not thinking about pink elephants. So think about something completely different. And then also think about setting some time aside for obsessing later. So this psychologist often tells her clients to think about, have a time of worrying, and that's all. You set it to that time and you don't think about it any other time. And you can always go back to the topic of overthinking if it needs to be really addressed and make a plan to deal with it. Once you've got a plan in action, you'll be less likely to be tempted to go back to the original worry. So it's really about training your brain to either think about something completely different or set yourself a time where you're really going to think about it and try and come up with a plan of action of how to deal with it. The thing that they really suggest is taking yourself out of it, which is what we discussed before. So becoming self-aware can go a long way when you're trying to deal with overthinking in the long term. Pay a little bit more attention to the feelings that you're feeling, and maybe take yourself out of it and try and go for a walk or do a bit of yoga. Recognize that your brain is in overdrive mode and then try and snap yourself out of it. So do something in real time rather than sitting and thinking about what might happen or what has happened. Yeah, so it's all about living in the moment and trying to control what you can control rather than letting your brain spiral into replaying or obsessing about what might happen in the future. It won't become a habit, and you won't overcome it straight away, but it's all about taking that time to repeat the practice of those tips, and you'll be teaching your mind to become calm and not to go into overdrive.
So is that what you're going to start doing then?
Yeah, I'm going to try and start doing that.
Try and appreciating your brain's on overdrive.
Yeah.
Try and switch it off by replacing those thoughts of worry with thoughts of reassurance.
Yeah, and also think about if I was trying to talk to someone else about it, what would I say? And be a bit kinder on myself.
Take your own advice.
Yeah, be kinder to myself.
Okay then, well, let's hopefully keep a little track on that.
And for the moment, keep taking my antidepressants. Which obviously isn't the answer for everyone, but for me it works. So, quite a heavy podcast.
I actually quite enjoyed it.
Good.
It felt a little bit more relaxed, even though it was a trickier subject for some, I guess.
Yes.
And how much we've learned.
That wraps up the podcast for this week, and I hope you found it very useful, and there was lots of tips you can take, and I'd love to hear your dating stories, actually.
It'd be interesting just to know if people, this feels like a different podcast, so it'd be interesting to know if people have got this far in it and also enjoyed listening to this sort of a bit more conversational type of
podcast. And also send us in your experiences if you felt something similar.
Proper agony aunt sort of we've become now with these admissions.
If you do want to get in touch, go to the website, which is www.katieleeson.com, and you can leave your questions or feedback on there. And we will see you next week when it's the very special guest that is Gemma Oatom.